you know that feeling you get when you like have a crush on a girl, and he, or you like start seeing somebody, and that like amazing like sort of life is this wondrous sort of fantastic whatever, and
yeah,
like I swear I haven't like felt that feeling in, I don't know, 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because my life sucked, but now like I'm actually starting to get that feeling again, because I'm sort of proving to myself, you know, that little smudge of success I had 5 or so years ago wasn't a fluke. Like I have so much more to say, and the more I see the state of indie music industry, I can't help but to think that they need to hear what I have to say.
Lord, I've been on a fire. I've been chasing anyone looking out my door. My little bit of country love. And if you don't mind me getting out of line, can you tell me how the stars shine looking out my door? My little bit of country love. Oh, if your feet aren't getting in the way, can you tell me why you'd wanna stay?
It's Gotta Be Pop. My name is Kurt Baker. I'm here with Wyatt and Todd. Wyatt's last name is Funderburk, and Todd's last name is Patton. And if you put it together in a word scramble, you can probably resemble some kind of word that's spelled pop, right? No, there's no O. There's no O in Funderburk.
I got a P and an O.
There's one in Patton.
And mine, so I'm pretty close.
Oh, yeah. Todd's got it all. But this is Todd's show.
We've only
Take
got
it, Todd.
One P between us.
Yeah.
Only one P.
Yeah.
Well, that was a great song that we just heard, huh?
Yeah, that was really good. That was BC Camp Light with Lord, I've Been on Fire. And before that was a little teaser of the interview that I did with BC, which we're going to be playing a little bit of soon.
Wicked excited for that.
Yeah. All right, we're going to get back into some pop music with a little XTC off of their 1992 album, Nonesuch. This is Then She Appeared.
Then She Appeared. Then she appeared, the first photograph on Fox Talbot's jail. I was a little
we're back.
So welcome back, everybody. That was Sucking on a Plum by a band called the Rosenbergs. The Rosenbergs is a band that no one knows about. No one knows who they are, what they're doing these days. They apparently recorded an album because it exists, and that song, Sucking on a Plum, is amazing. And it's on that album. I think it's from 2001 or 2000, something like that. And it sounds excellent. But if anybody out there has any information on what the Rosenbergs are doing these days, feel free to let us know, and we'll be sure to update everyone on that great band.
You know, regardless of what you're going to say about power pop, that's one power pop song title, Sucking on a Plum. Come on. That's great. I love it.
Yeah, it's nice and whiny.
It's great.
Yeah, Sucking on a Plum.
So speaking of a typical power pop title, how about your song, Kurt, that you just played?
Well, speaking of titles, haven't we all said this before? I would if I could. I said that about a little boating trip that I could have gone on with a couple of friends. They wanted to go out on a boat on the big lake yesterday.
Wow.
But they told me that I needed to be there at 8:45 in the morning. And
no
I said,
good.
Well, I would if I You're could, right. but I'm a creature of the night,
That's
baby.
Right.
And I was out till 4
you
in the morning doing
you can't, yeah,
tremendous
things. You can't
things.
Do that. You can't.
But anyway, that song was by a band called The Sweet Three, which I absolutely had no idea were a band until a couple weeks ago. A buddy of mine named Dave Ragsdale gave me a mix CD, so I put it in my computer and it just came up as track 11, and I was like, I have no idea who this band is. I didn't know the song title, I didn't know the group, so I tried to Shazam it with my phone and it didn't come up. And then I was like kind of searching for words of the title, you know, for the title of you know, what I heard in the chorus, and I couldn't come up with any of that. And then finally I realized, oh, I should just ask Dave himself what the song is and who it's
good
by.
Idea. That's a good idea.
Yeah. Anyway.
So, guys, speaking of creatures of the night, we're going to go to 1982 and Kiss with I Love It Loud. No, I'm just kidding.
Perfect. I love it loud.
I was like, I don't see that song on my playlist.
Vinnie
What's
Vincent,
going on?
Dude.
I vow to play no 80s Kiss on this podcast.
Wait, are we not playing Kiss?
No. That was a joke.
Oh,
did you get
dude,
excited?
I was so, yeah, I thought we were playing that. I haven't reviewed the songs.
All right, up next we have my interview with BC Camplight, and we're going to start it off with a little Blood and Peanut Butter off of his debut album.
Once, when I looked and saw you standing by the subway line, but if you found out it was a lie, I would die. Thank you.
This is Wyatt with Brian Christenzio. Did I say that right?
Yep.
From BC Camp Light. How you doing today?
Not bad, Wyatt, not bad.
How did you get into making music originally?
I think I should just preface this interview by saying I tend to not do a ton of interviews. One, because not that many people ask me. And two, because I always end up sounding like a dick every time I open my mouth.
Right.
But so I'm going to answer these questions as truthfully as I can, and then some people say, "What a pretentious douchebag!" But you asked me the question about how I got into making music. Honest to God, I really didn't get into it. It's like it's always been sort of an instinct, I guess, for me. It's like this thing that I have to do. It's like kind of like, you know, a dog shedding its fur. Like I feel like I overheat when I don't get things musically out of my system. You know, I just sort of shrivel up and die. But I don't remember sort of a defining moment as a youth, you know, picking up an instrument and going like, wow, I'm good at this. I've always sort of viewed music as sort of slippery religious point in my brain that I can never quite grasp, and I've always just really been attracted to, you know, trying to capture it, but there was never anybody that pushed me into it, or I didn't listen to a band and go like, whoa, that was awesome. Speaking of that ridiculous voice I just did, I checked out your show for a second.
Okay,
who's the guy that sounds like Spicoli?
That's Kurt Baker.
He's pretty good on the radio there.
Yeah, he's
I couldn't tell if he was being
that's
sort of ironic or not, but somebody said something and he actually went, whoa, totally.
Yeah, no, that is 100% Kurt Baker. Okay, so as far as I know, you play all the instruments on your records. Correct me if I'm wrong, but which instrument did you start with and which is your favorite to play?
I'm a piano player. You know, I play a lot of other stuff. I didn't play the drums on my records, at least not the majority of them.
Gotcha.
But, I've always been... Piano's my main thing.
Very cool. I read that you posed as a volunteer at a mental institution to find your inspiration for your second album, Blink of a Nihilist. What's the story with that?
That is a complete, utter misunderstanding. I think it's been written about.
It's an urban legend.
No, well, I've read a few times the sort of mental health. I was in a mental hospital for about a week, or a month, I'm sorry. And somehow that turned into me being working or something at a mental hospital. I've seen that so many times.
Right.
And I think I've read it so many times, I just started saying that.
Yeah. I thought it was a little weird because I read a couple different interviews where it was a little different. So I just wanted to figure out what the deal was with that. But did you take inspiration from mental patients and all that or what?
My record was just about completed when I was in the mental hospital.
Okay. So
that would be a no. Sorry to squash that one.
That's okay. Fair enough. That would have been really cool for the, you know, behind the music one day. But yeah. What is your favorite album of all time and when did you discover it?
It's me being a douchebag again. You ready?
I'm ready.
I really don't have one. I mean, obviously I love the Beach Boys.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a big Brian Wilson fan for a long time, so Pet Sounds. And
who's that again? Go ahead.
I love the early 70s Beach Boys stuff, like Friends and 2020 and that kind of stuff.
Very cool.
That's big. I'm really big into classical music. And by really big, I mean I've listened to like three dudes a lot and don't know much about any of this. So don't quiz me. But
I gotcha.
Yeah. I love your boy Jeff Lynne.
Well, see, that's leading into a upcoming question, so let's not get too much into him.
Yeah, I mean, all the people that you're supposed to like, I like.
Okay, that's good. speaking of, you know, the people you're supposed to like, who's your favorite Beatle?
All right, well, I think this is how it goes in general for people in that world. I think you grow up, and probably the first person you gravitate towards as a sort of a young person would probably be Paul, because that the pop sensibility, and when you're 6 years old, you're not really like going like, what does he mean by that, you know? And then you like go to college, and if you're a girl, you like wear a bandana and pretend you're a lesbian, and then and then you love John,
right?
And then you're like 24 and you're like, I love George. George is the best Beatle. And like everyone who's between 21 and 28, 29, it's just George. Yeah. That's the answer every time. And then like you have to have like major balls, as awesome as he was, to be like, fucking Ringo. Yeah, Ringo's right. The best. To answer you, probably I think the best sort of combination of all those guys to me is John. He had the pop sensibility that I love, not as overt as Paul did,
right?
And obviously had that sort of emotional depth that you start kind of looking for as you get older. Yeah. So I'll go with John.
That is very that's a very good assessment, and I agree with that on many levels.
Who's yours, Wyatt?
I'm just gonna throw it out there. I go back and forth. I think I kind of fell into that sort of thing where when I was growing up, it was all about Paul. And then I'm a bass player, so like Paul again like was huge for me. And then John, like when I was in college or so, I really got into John. Not as much his solo records, but just like his contributions to the Beatles. Like I thought like he had just like some of the edgier, like, you know, just sort of the more risky songs, you know, and Paul was kind of playing it safe a lot of the time. And then I got really into George when I really got into like Traveling Wilburys and Jeff Lynne and all that. So I kind of picked up on George and then followed his solo career, and I feel like, you know, his solo stuff is way better than Paul and John's. So now we can talk about Jeff Lynne, but yeah. So who is your favorite Traveling Wilbury, if you will?
Well, in the context of the Wilburys, is Jeff Lynne.
Correct.
In the context of that band.
Right.
I didn't get a chance to see that documentary, but I heard that Roy Orbison was sort of like, even Dylan was sort of nervous to be around him.
Oh, yeah.
And but it's kind of hard to break Lynne and Dylan, Orbison, Petty, right. Harrison, you know, but if you kind of throw them all together, I think you can't listen to that music and the way it was produced without saying, shit, that's Jeff Lynne.
Yeah. You know? And for those of us who know Jeff Lynne and his sound, it's kind of just overwhelmingly Jeff Lynne, or Otis Wilbury as it were. So yeah, that's the correct answer. You passed.
Thank you.
I read somewhere that you're a big fan of TV themes, or is that another urban legend?
No, that I don't know if that's an urban legend or not. I think I wrote a song called Richard Dawson on my first record, which basically happened like this. I wrote the song, and the chorus of the song had no vocal, and it was just a trumpet. And I think I said somewhere that I could imagine Richard Dawson from The Family Feud.
Okay.
God rest his soul. He just died a couple of days ago.
Really?
Coming out and dancing to that song and like, you know, ba 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 ba, ladies and gentlemen, yeah. Richard Dawson. You know, like.
Yeah.
So I think sort of off the cuff, somebody asked me like, what was the inspiration of that, and I said like 70s game show.
I got you.
Theme. I wish I would have thought about that. Trying to think, there's so many good theme songs. Because a theme song, man, that's sort of the essence of pop right there. Not only does
it really is. I don't know if you're familiar with Jesse Fredericks, no. But he wrote a bunch of theme songs in the late '80s, such as Full House and Step by Step and Perfect Strangers.
Nice.
So I feel like he's kind of the best of the theme song writers.
What was the Full House one?
The Full House one was
Everywhere You Look. Okay,
I always get that confused with the one that Urkel was in.
Yeah, he wrote that one too. Yeah, this guy was like running shit in the TV theme industry for like 5 years. He wrote like all the big ones.
For me, it's hard to beat Cheers. It's also hard to beat.
Yeah, Cheers is phenomenal.
If I sat at the piano and I said, like, making your way in the world,
yeah, exactly,
everything you got, like, you have 20 seconds, 25 right. seconds to mm-hmm. to sell the show, and those people know what
that's just
doing.
That's just a great song. I mean,
yeah.
So yeah, I agree. That's awesome.
Nothing's gonna stop me. Out.
It's gotta be pop, doesn't it?
I mean, it doesn't have to be, but it's really good if it is.
And we're gonna listen to it and talk about it on this show. It does.
That last song you heard was "Shattered Dreams" by a band called Johnny Hates Jazz. Who, you know, I think we kind of have a theme going here. That's another band that I know nothing about. It's just a song from 1987 that I love. And what was the song that we heard before that one, Kurt?
Oh my gosh, that was Stay Away by the Sahara Hot Nights. Sahara Hot Nights.
They sound like a group of hot chicks. Is that correct?
Holy shit, they are extremely beautiful women. They are a Swedish band. At the time that record came out, the lead singer was actually dating the lead singer of The Hives. I first got into the Sahara Hot Nights when they put out a record called Jenny Bomb back in, I guess it was 2002 or 3 or so, and it was really good rock and roll record. It was kind of on the height of that big kind of garage rock.
Post-Strokes.
Revival. Post-Strokes, Hives, and the Vines, and all this shit.
Right.
But I really got into their next record, which was what Stay Away was on, which was called Kiss and Tell.
Yes.
And this record was they were. I remember reading in interviews where they were saying, you know, we really just wanted to make a record like Rick Springfield or Cyndi Lauper or some of the like early 80s new wave artists. And when I got the record, I was a senior in high school, and that record it really kind of opened me up to so many different new kind of genres of music and got me really interested in 80s new wave. And because of that record, I started buying a lot of new wave records and 80s stuff out of the dollar bins at record stores because it was so cheap and it was just in the same kind of vein. And it's a really good power pop record. It's really well done. They just put out a new record. They put out a record a couple years ago. They're still really big in Sweden, but they put out a record of all covers, which apparently is a really cool thing to do. I wonder where they got it from. No, they did some really weird stuff. Like, they did a cover of Big Me by the Foo Fighters, which is really questionable about how good it is or not. But amongst
there is
other
a question
things,
among some critics on how good it is.
Yeah, definitely. But the original record, Kiss and Tell, is great. Yeah, sorry to ramble
those
on
some,
about that.
Good tunes there. Before that, we heard part one of my interview with BC Camp Light. Hope you guys are enjoying it. We're going to play part two in a little bit. But right now, we're going to talk about an album that we all took a listen to this past week. And we're going to turn it over to Kurt to tell us about it.
Well, let me tell you who it's by. It's by a guy named CJ Ramone, who was in the Ramones. Reconquista is the title. And I don't even think, you know, it's funny, my buddy Brad, who's a huge Ramones fan, had mentioned, he's like, oh, you know that CJ's got a new record, and we're like, what? So I looked it up on iTunes and sampled through it, and I was like, this record's actually really kind of good. I wasn't expecting it. You know, as a Ramones fan, you know, so many people love the Ramones, and they've been, you know, glorified for what they've done numerous times in, you know, the media, but a lot of people only care about their first three or four albums. And if you're a true Ramones fan, you really like dig deep in their catalog. And for me, I really got, you know, I got into like their 90s records, and Mondo Bizarro is one of them. And CJ Ramone is the guy that took Dee Dee's place when he left the band in 1989, and CJ really carried the torch, and he kept the spirit of the Ramones alive. And he was the first guy in the band to actually take on singing lead besides Joey, and his songs where he sang lead were really good, I thought, and he had a really great voice and he had the passion, he embodied the spirit, and he really rejuvenized the Ramones at the time and kind of kept them going for the last, you know, I guess 6 or 7 years of their career. But but yeah, this record kind of came out of nowhere, and you know, for me, I'm kind of blown away by how cool it is, and I think, you know, you really got to be a Ramones fan to really love it and enjoy it. because if you're not a Ramones fan, you're like, well, you know, what is this? But there's a lot of songs on there that, you know, for a Ramones fan and for someone that like CJ, it's really, really kind of cool stuff and good songwriting, good playing. I think the song that we'd like to play is a song that he actually kind of wrote as a tribute to the members of the Ramones that have passed away, Johnny, Joey, and Dee Dee. And it's a good anthem. The record's kind of, you know, filled with standard Ramones core pop punk, but it's done really well, and it's done with a good vocalist, and that's how I feel. I think it's funny that it's really gotten no press or publicity at all. And I think CJ just kind of mentioned it on Facebook one day. He's like, by the way, I have a new record out. So there you have it. Reconquista by CJ Ramone. And this song is called Three Angels.
Three angels on my shoulder, I'm always looking over. Three angels on my shoulder, they're for life. When they put me in my grave, I know I will be saved by three angels waiting on the other side. Johnny said life's tough, so you gotta be tougher. Gotta keep your eyes on the prize, 'cause there ain't nobody else looking out for you. And it doesn't pay to sit and wonder why.
CJ Ramone off his new record, Reconquista. I gotta brush up on my Espanol. But yeah, that was it. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just rock and roll. Wyatt, Todd, thoughts?
You know, I really did like this record. I was kind of, I'm not really the biggest late Ramones fan, so I'm not really a big CJ Ramone fan. I am impressed that there are so many brothers in that family that they can always find another member of the band whenever somebody leaves.
Yeah. Friends.
Just saying.
Friends, but 2020.
Yeah, I really liked it. I mean, if it wasn't CJ Ramone and it was just some random band, I might not like it as much. But I kind of like the fact that it's CJ Ramone and he's doing like an album that sounds exactly like the Ramones.
Yeah.
And there's some, you know, really cool tunes on it. You know, it's not going to make my top 10 this year, but it's good.
Totally. I mean, it's just, for me, it was like such a surprising thing to hear. Like, just kind of came out of the blue, man, and for it to not totally suck was really cool. Todd?
Yeah, no, I actually really like this album. I've, the past several years, I've kind of shifted more out of the pop-punk category of music and into more of, you know, an indie pop sort of thing. So I guess I'm a little out of touch with, like, newer pop-punk stuff, but this album, I mean, I don't know if this is putting anyone down or giving praise, but I think it sounded a lot like the Huntingtons to me, which I think yeah, that gives it, praise, probably more praise to Mikey from the Huntingtons. But that's, to yeah. me, that's a compliment. I thought it sounded really, like you said, well, I mean, as Ramones as the Ramones could sound. And right. it is exactly a tribute. Kurt pretty much said, if I can quote him right before we went into the song, he said that it was kind of a tribute to the to those guys. Right. It's exactly what it is. And the whole album yep. is a tribute. And it's excellent.
Yeah.
It's totally, he's humble and the songs are great. He has a great pop sensibility. What I love is that no song is too long. I don't like when songs right. are just keep pop punk songs, especially just go on forever. Right. Every song's just got a great hook. Certain songs are better. I think some of my favorites are Shut Up. Three Angels obviously is great. The first track, What We Gonna Do Now, is awesome. And mm-hmm. I like Low on Ammo too, the second to last song.
Low on Ammo actually is one of my favorite ones out of the songs. I really liked you know, King Cobra and yeah. And like Brass Ring, like the harder edge songs are really cool. I love CJ's vocal delivery, and I first got into that by listening to the Mondo Bizarro record, which I think is one of the best Ramones records still. And I am kind of like, I just listen to those late Ramones records, and that really kind of stuck with me as you know, something that I really love. But I didn't even make the connection with the Huntingtons, and now that you brought that up, like, wow, that's like, I kind of forgot about the Huntingtons for so long. Yeah. Like, I used to listen to the Huntingtons all the time. That record, Plastic Surgery.
Yeah, you know, I'm in the liner notes of that album.
It is in the
liner. Are you serious? Get out of town, dude. No.
If you read the thank yous in that
Shut
album,
the
thanks
fuck
me.
Up. Really? That record. I listened to that record every day for a month when I got it, and like, because they, out of every band, you know, the Ramones are a band that it's a 3-chord punk rock band, right. and. You can either do it really shitty or you can do it well. And there's no in between. There's no middle ground with that.
Right.
It's like you gotta do it well or you're gonna be really shitty. I saw an awful, awful, awful Ramones tribute band in Boston a couple months ago. They were playing with The Connection, and it was like almost disrespectful. There was a guy that was playing bass, and he wasn't playing with a pick, and he was playing with his fingers, and he had this like Rage Against the Machine bass. Like, I don't know.
There's so much wrong with
yeah.
that.
That's
there was so much wrong with that. And it was at a house party. It was a house party, and like and the cops came, and like they started playing Blitzkrieg Bop all slow. It was like disrespectful. Yeah. It's like, come on, like, you know, obviously the Ramones music is easy to, you know, do by yourself, and that's kind of like the spirit of punk rock. It's like, you know, you can pick up guitar and do it, but like you got to have the passion, and you have to have the songwriting chops. And CJ kind of walked into the Ramones after they already had their career pretty much, but he can still hold his own. And I think that this record is just kind of a fun thing for Ramones fans. And I hope that this record gets some more attention, because it's, you know, it was released a couple of weeks ago on iTunes, and that's all I've heard about. There's nothing on the internet about it. So for all you out there, you heard it first. You heard it first. You're on It's Gonna Be Pop.
Wyatt, what do you got next for us?
Well, actually, coming up next, we're going to talk a little bit about this guy named Jeff Lynne.
Oh, really? Who's he?
he's a guy that was in this band.
The Wonders?
Called The Idle Race, and some of you may also know him from
The Move. He was in The Move.
ELO. And then most of you may know him as the best producer ever to live on this planet. And this song that I'm going to play is a song that he wrote and produced and recorded, and it's really pretty amazing. It's a collaboration of, you know, two of my favorite bands of all time, basically, ABBA and ELO. And it's kind of, you know, the only time we're ever going to see what would happen if you stuck ABBA and ELO together, and this is the closest thing you're ever going to get. It's Jeff Lynne producing Agnetha Fältskog of ABBA.
Wait, how do you pronounce her name?
1985 for her album called Eyes of a Woman. This song is called One Way Love. I'm not like running into any like awkward territory here, but what's your favorite adult beverage?
Man, if that's as awkward as you get, then we're going to be fine.
Okay.
I love whiskey. I'm actually drinking some whiskey right now.
Very nice.
I've been on this kick lately. About a year ago, I was introduced to tequila with a splash of white tequila with a splash of soda and a squeeze of lime, and it's very refreshing in the summertime. And it has a slightly more euphoric, makes you a little bit more sort of affable than as compared to the, wow, the Crown Royal that I'm drinking right now.
Gotcha.
But I like that about whiskey, is it sort of makes you angry.
Right.
And if I'm, I used to drink, let me back up a couple steps, but
yeah.
My old band, we used to share just a gigantic bottle of booze on stage all the time. But then I discovered this whiskey called Cutty Sark.
Yeah.
And I swear, whenever I would drink it, I could go about a step and a half higher vocally when I performed or in the studio. So the bass player in my band, Dave, and I went down to a farm, just decided to record a whole bunch of songs, and it just so happened at this farmhouse they had a booze cellar, and found a bottle of Cutty Sark from like 1920 or something, and downed it, and it was amazing. And there's some sort of secret ingredient in Cutty Sark, that's CUTTYSARK, and I have no stock in this company whatsoever. But if any of the 50 people that listen to your show, if any of them want to feel pretty special, go there and get some Cutty Sark, $21.99 retail.
That was Cutty Sark, ladies and gentlemen. Brought to you by BC Camp Light.
Yeah. Cutty Sark will keep you busy.
Have you ever, I know, you probably have a lot of the same heroes as me. Have you ever gotten to, hear feedback from any of your musical heroes on your work?
You know, there's been plenty of critics and things that have written me and told me how much they like my music. But nothing that really stands out. The one moment I really do remember, though, was right before I got signed to my record deal, my first record deal. I played South by Southwest, and I was in the airport. It was maybe 2 or 3 months after my record self-released it.
Right.
And I was sitting in the airport, and there's these girls, these really cute girls, and they're looking over at me, and I'm looking at their mouths, and I can see that they're mouthing the word Brian.
Yeah.
And then another one going like, oh my God. And I'm thinking is this what this is going to bring in my life? And then, so it's just kind of playing it cool. And we're at the baggage thing, where you pick up your bags. And I noticed more and more people sort of gathering around and pointing my way. And I thought, this can't be right. There's no way. And I look to my right, and I'm standing next to Brian Wilson. It was such a
right. How can you be mad about that?
In a way I was.
Right, but come on. I mean, of all people.
There was the 3 seconds of oh my God, that's Brian Wilson. But it sort of brings me to a point where celebrity, I'm really kind of weird with that whole world, because here is a guy that is as important to me as a human being and as an entertainer as anyone, outside the people I know personally.
Right.
And I honestly could not have given a shit that he was standing next to me.
Mm-hmm.
There was people that were walking up to him and touching him.
Right.
And, brushing against him so he wouldn't even notice. So you get that feeling. I don't understand that world of celebrity. I don't understand what is so great about seeing someone. what is important to me is that guy's work. So there's, I'll never run into somebody and say, oh my God, that was so amazing. Maybe with the exception of, for some reason, sports stars do it to me. Because I know sports I was captain on my high school football team, but
So you share that with Brian Wilson as well.
Yeah, see, there you go.
He was the captain of his football team in high school.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And we were both at one point in our lives gigantic 280-pound beasts.
There you go.
But, So like if I met Charles Barkley or something, I'd be right. like, oh, shit, fuck Charles Barkley. It's right. like, I can't do what he did, and he was awesome.
Right, right.
Yeah. But musicians and movie stars, and that doesn't impress me. I played a show, about 6 months ago or so with Julian Lennon.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's
the
cool.
dude was standing in the dressing room mm-hmm. wearing a white tuxedo and a white fucking top hat. Uh-huh. And he comes in with his girlfriend and looks exactly like Yoko Ono. and he actually had the balls to say, like, there's too many people here.
Wow.
I feel like I'm drawing to a cent. You're wearing a white tuxedo and a white top hat. Like, there's I honestly, like, and, you know, obviously his lineage kind of speaks for itself, and I think even if I met his dad, I wouldn't have gone over the moon.
Right.
I just don't have it in me to like
right.
kind of go apeshit. But I end up when I meet these people, I end up just getting more mad than anything else. Like really, right. you're really that dude. Wearing a white tuxedo.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, there's no saying that we wouldn't be that dude too if we were in that position. Yeah. So you never know.
No, I am that dude. I know. That's why.
you're wearing a white tuxedo right now, actually, I bet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just for the interview. Okay, so this is a question that was submitted by Kurt Baker. So let's say you walk into an elevator and standing there was Ted Nugent. What would you do or say, if anything? And I guess after that conversation, you probably wouldn't say anything.
Yeah. I wouldn't say anything. But it's weird, like... You know, I'm more impressed because I'm an idiot. I'm more impressed by people like Ted Nugent because I remember like 1991 when Damn Yankees came out.
Right, and, right.
Like, you know, can you tell me how? And he does like the guitar solo and he's chewing his chewing gum, you know. And I thought that was really
totally.
Cool.
Yeah.
And I think subconsciously to this day I stole that from him because I always chew gum when I perform and I also always take off my shoes too. I don't know why.
Really?
I chew gum and I always wear a suit and I am in my socks. It's just the only way I can get comfortable on stage. But people come up to me all the time and say like, man, that was really distracting. That's fucking weird. Like, why are you chewing gum when you're singing? And I say, I don't know. It's just the way I do it. But like, I didn't think of it till this very moment. I think that was Ted Nugent.
Wow. I've just uncovered the revelation of why you chew gum on stage. I'm proud.
You know, I actually started to like understand my answer as I was talking.
That's awesome.
Which I usually do. So I'd probably say like,
what if he was chewing gum? Would you say something then?
I'd say like, can I have a piece? Let me do a little duet in the elevator. I know high enough. I know my damn Yankees. I ain't no square. I think I would say, yo, dude, that's fucking cool. Chewing your gum. You don't know me.
That's great.
Not many people do, but I chew gum too. And after, you know, after security got off of my back, I just go along my merry way.
What is next for BC Camp Light?
Well, I have to sort of be on eggshells here about what's going on as far as what I'm doing now, because I was recently deported mm-hmm. from the UK. I didn't do anything illegal, but my sort of like a visa paperwork situation that we have going
right.
on. But essentially what's happening now is I've adopted Manchester, England, as my home. I absolutely love it. Mm-hmm. Since I was deported, I'm actually just in the past month staying in my parents' house, lifting weights for about 8 hours a day, going insane.
Wow.
Thank God they have a piano. But I visited Manchester 6 or 7 months ago and hooked up with this studio, and we started doing my third record, which even though it's not a quarter way done, I can say definitively that it's easily the most interesting and the most important to me record that I've ever made. I'm still with Network Publishing.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what's going to happen, sometime in the next 3 weeks or so, I'm going to snake my way back into the United Kingdom, get back to Manchester, finish this record, and then assemble the band of bands. Yeah, probably stay there for quite a while and and do another two or three records. And working on a film in August, like sort of a major motion picture film, which I'm scoring.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah, yeah, sort of. I've done a lot of work for movies in the past, but it's always buying my songs that I'd already written. So,
right.
But this one is actually stimulating my brain, and I'm using more of the sort of classical skills I have to score this movie. But my plan for the next couple of years is to be in Manchester with my, you know, my musical family out there, and my my very good friends, which I miss insanely. Do these records, put on a couple great tours, and hopefully by the time I'm, you know, 35, 36, think like, you know, the last four or so years have been the most productive in my career, and I really think that is about to happen, because I know that what I'm doing now is the best stuff I've ever done.
Back. This is It's Gotta Be Pop, and that was BC Camplight with Soy Tonto. That was an interview that I did with BC this past week, and I want to say thanks to Brian. He's a really great guy for doing that, and I wish him the best of luck. We're gonna definitely follow his career with great interest. So Todd's gonna play a little jam for you.
I got a deep cut for you guys. Are you guys ready for a deep cut?
I love the deep cuts.
I mean, we've had a few deep cuts, but this one's pretty deep. This is by a band called South Bass, who actually never had an album. This guy, he was the keyboardist from the Hippos, if anyone remembers the ska punk power pop band from the late
90s. That was one of my first shows
and
ever,
so
man.
After the Hippos broke up, he went off and made his own band called South Bass, and he put out a single on the website or something. I don't even remember how I got the song. But I think they had a website, and he put up the single. And it's amazing, and it's called What Can I Say? So I hope you enjoy it.
Here it is. Sincere. I should have known from the start your love would take.
Don't you see what you do?
I should have known from the start your love would tear me apart. Cause you're so state of the art. You straight up ripped out my heart. And so I'm begging you please. In fact, I'm down on my knees, girl. What can I say? And what can I do? Why do I deserve all the hell you put me through? Oh, what can I say? And what can I do? No, I can't go on, but I can't stay with you.
Welcome back. That was The Muffs with Best Time Around from Happy Birthday to Me, 1997. That is
great record.
One of my favorite pop albums.
It's great. Should definitely check it out. And that's probably my favorite Muff song. So it's really, really up there on my favorite songs. Well, guys, we are almost out of time here. We hope you enjoyed the show.
Time to hit the hay.
Did you have a fun night, KB?
I had a great night. I had a wonderful night. Actually, I was out in my Mitten Street driveway grilling and chilling earlier before I decided to meet up with you guys and play some pop tunes. I was grilling some asparagus, chicken.
I saw that picture you posted on Facebook. It made me kind of want to be there with you, buddy.
Dude, Maine's great, man. You got to come up, Todd. Wyatt's gotten the taste of Maine.
Speaking of Facebook, you guys should like our page.
Please.
It's called It's Gotta Be Pop with an exclamation point.
Yes.
That's right. So, let's call it a day. But before we leave, we're going to play one more song for all you listeners out there. And this is a song from a Dutch group from Rotterdam. Which would be the Netherlands or Holland, depends on what you want to call it. Really doesn't matter. But what you need to know is that this band is great, and they formed a couple years ago. They're called the Kick, the K-I-K, and their lead single is this tune that we're about to play called Simona, which is actually a cover from a I guess it's a '60s song, but. They changed the lyrics and they retitled the song, and what it is just a great little nugget of joy, and they got a great YouTube video for it. Yeah, it's a great little outro song for It's Gotta Be Pop. So listen to your Dutch fun and eat a lemon cake and have a good night, guys.
See you later. Love you.
Bye bye.
Ow!
Simone, je ziet me nooit eens staan. Simone, Simone. Altijd in het rood gekleed, ik wil met haar een date. Ze heet Simone, Simone. Ze lacht naar iedere man, maar nooit naar mij, alleen in mijn dromen. Simone, ooit komt er een dag waarop ik lach. Simone, geef me nou een kans. Heet mannen bij de vleet, is altijd op dieet. Zo is Simone,
Simone.
Ze hangt in kringen rond, waar ik me never nooit zou vertonen.
Simone,
oh alsjeblieft, ik ben verliefd. Simone, geef me nou een kans. Je ziet me nooit eens staan.
Simone, Simone.
Ja, ik zou alles doen voor een gemeende zoen van mijn Simone.
Simone.
Als ik het lef eens had, ja, zou Simone mij dan belonen.
Simone.
Over een jaar, dan schrijf ik haar. Ja, Simone.
Simone, Simone,
je ziet me nooit eens staan.